Barbie turns 50 years old in March, so when Scott fills in for me next Sunday, he'll be bringing an entourage of dolls for a special segment. Barbie has been reinvented so many times. Disco, Malibu, astronaut, Star Trek Barbie. We want you to send in photos of your cherished or modified Barbie dolls. Feel free to pose her wherever you are, whether under the St. Louis Arch or skiing in Vail or serving a plate of pot roast at the dinner table. To find out how, visit our blog, npr.org/soapbox.
Oscar night is this Sunday, and every year, NPR special correspondent Susan Stamberg anticipates the evening by going behind the movie screen to see how they make the magic. Today, she visits a shoe shop that has dressed actors' feet for five decades.
In the beginning, there was the Ten Commandments, the movie Moses facing the big Red Sea.
Behold his mighty hand!
When Moses parted the waters, an unseen fella named Willie Rivera was in on the miracle.
He made the sandals for, what's his name?
For Charlton Heston?
For Charlton Heston, he made the sandals for him.
Raul Ojeda runs Willie's shoe service these days. At 91, Willie likes to go back to Mexico whenever possible. He can leave the shop in Raul's hands because he's trained Raul in all the shoemaking arts. Willie's also told Raul the great old Hollywood stories, like this one from the early days when Willie was working for Western Costume, a big wardrobe house.
Fred Astaire was dancing and suddenly his shoe, I believe his right shoe, burst open and they rushed the shoe over to the shoe department and Willie's boss couldn't figure out how to put it back together and Willie said, "Give me the shoe." Willie fixes the shoe, and they send it back to Mr. Stair, and he was so impressed with the work that used Willie later to have some of his personal shoes made.
Willie made them to precise specifications.
Fred Astaire used to wear 8.5 narrow.
Willie Rivera, soulmate once to Fred Astaire.
I'm stepping out, my dear, to breathe an atmosphere that simply reeks with class.
Willie learned shoemaking from the bottom up.
My grandfather and my uncles were shoemakers.
When he was 10 in Mexico City, Willie's parents asked him what he wanted to do in life.
So I said, I want to be a shoemaker. And I started to learn to be a shoemaker when I was 30 years old. And ever since, I loved my trade and I'm very happy.
Willie moved to California as a young man and in 1952 landed a job at Western Costume. Raul says much of Movieland's custom work was being done there.
In those days, the movie business was very big and all of the customs on the movies were made by tailors and so the shoemakers were tailoring the shoes.
Willie's job at Western was to make sample shoes, prototypes from designers' drawings. If his sample was approved, the shoe went into production for the film. After 4 years, Willie decided to open his own shop across the street from Paramount Studios.
He made big, big business.
Again, shop manager Raul Ojeda.
The very first week after he opened up his store, Paramount switched the account from Western Custom to Willie's.
And his first major commission was that Charlton Heston epic, The Ten Commandments. Then came a tidal wave of orders. After Ten Commandments, Willie did boots for more Westerns than he can count, plus shoes for everyone in the first Star Trek films. Willie was busy. So busy that he moved to a bigger space in Hollywood on Cahuenga Boulevard. The back of Willie's shoe service looks like a launch pad for the Industrial Revolution. Ancient, grimy machinery for sanding, hammering, stretching, gluing, and of course, shoes. 5-inch stiletto heels, black studded leather boots. The front room is lined with framed 8x10 glossies of famous customers, all autographed to Willie, from Lily Tomlin, Bill Cosby, Raquel Welch, Bing Crosby. Behind the counter, Raul takes the orders for shoes and other leather things.
I have these two belts. We want to match the medium to the small.
Tracy White is an assistant designer on TNT's show The Closer. The belts are for the star, Kira Sedgwick, and it's a rush job.
Okay, so we should have this ready by 5 p.m.
That's great.
Yeah.
These days, they do lots of work for television as well as movies. But rather than making shoes from scratch, as they did in the old days, Willie's Shoe Service does alterations on ready-made shoes, tailoring them for a particular film. It's cheaper for Hollywood designers that way. They've altered shoes for Iron Man, Walk Hard. The title alone could bring more work to Willie's. And they just modified some vintage 1930s shoes for the forthcoming film Public Enemies, Johnny Depp as gangster John Dillinger. The designer for that one phoned Raoul from Chicago. The movie needed a lot of work done as soon as possible.
So they FedExed 70 pairs of shoes from Chicago. We finished everything the next day in the morning, and we FedExed them back.
In one day?
In one day.
In addition to rush jobs, they still do some time-consuming, made-to-measure custom work at Willie's. Raoul says some of the custom customers are less movie stars and more movie buffs.
There's some Star Trekky people. I don't know how to call them. It's a group of fans.
Yeah.
They learned that we made the original shoes for Star Trek, and they wanted new ones made exactly like them. We charged them $800, which was a heck of a deal, and they were happy.
Another Willie customer is neither movie star nor buff.
Whose shoes are these?
This is for Jesse Jackson.
This is Salvador Hermosilla, one of the shop's four employees.
Jesse Jackson shoes?
Yeah.
Wow, three pairs.
I made 4 pairs for him.
The Reverend Jesse Jackson phones in his order. The shop has a wooden model of his foot, size 12 and a half. Raoul says they've made more than 20 pairs of shoes for Jackson over the years.
Hi.
Hi.
But you don't have to be famous to have work done at Willie's. Lots of locals come, too. The locals are loyal.
Why do you come here?
Because they're the best. They were on vacation recently, and I just didn't get anything done.
Once upon a time, in the golden old days, movies could order a pair of custom-made shoes that might withstand 40 years of wandering in the desert with a little touch-up repair from decade to decade. Today, in Hollywood, the trek is more from studio to the car. But when movies need to put an actor in someone else's shoes, they count on Willie's to do the job.
I am here.
Put off thy shoes from off thy feet.
I'm Susan Stamberg, NPR News.
Go. Proclaim liberty throughout all the lands, unto all the inhabitants thereof.
Willie's Shoe Service and Raoul are awaiting your visit at NPR.org. This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Ari Shapiro.
And I'm Steve Inske.
The Walt Disney Company has mastered the art of marketing to young girls. Just ask any parent who has a daughter who insists on dressing like Snow White or the Little Mermaid. So what about boys? Well, Disney XD is a new cable channel aimed at boys from 6 to 14 and their allowances. Nate DeMeo reports.
For years, the Disney Company doled out fantasy with an even hand. They had Cinderella's castle, but they also had Tom Sawyer's Island. They had tiaras and coonskin caps. But lately, Disney's corporate icons have gone all girly.
So wait, my God's the Jonas Brothers.
Dude, it's Hannah Montana.
We were hearing that boys, they loved the programming on Disney Channel, but it wasn't their favorite channel.
And that bothered Disney Channel president Rich Ross. Over the past several years, he's helped the company develop a staggeringly successful business model. One that can usher a girl from her princess phase to her High School Musical phase to her Jonas phase. But he says the company never paused to figure out how to do the same thing with boys.
There were over 18 million boys, 6 to 14, out there. And it seemed like we had an opportunity to talk to them and use all the knowledge we learned on creating Disney Channel to be able to make a great offering for boys specifically.
After a couple of years of exhaustive market research, he says the company learned that today's boy is much more emotionally sophisticated than he gets credit for. He's interested in sharing experience, in striving toward personal goals, in finding expression for his complicated inner life. They also learned he likes sports and video games.
What started as a game, Aaron Stone, has become the ultimate test.
The first product of that research is Aaron Stone. It's a live-action series with a premise that seems to have been spit out of a computer straight out of fifth-grade boy. It's about a basketball-playing, video-game-loving high school nobody. It turns out his favorite video game is actually a recruiting tool for a secret spy organization. Soon our unlikely hero is saving the world between classes.
You can be Charlie Landers later, but here and now, be Aaron Stone.
Aaron Stone will be joined by new cartoons, live-action comedy, reality shows, lots of music.
On the sports side, we're very lucky that a brother brand of ours is ESPN, the leader in sports programming globally.
Between ESPN and their record labels and radio stations, Disney ought to be able to roll up America's boys the same way it has America's girls. But it might not be so easy.
Tween boys are notoriously hard to reach.
Jane Buckingham studies young consumers for the market research firm The Intelligence Group. She says marketers and programmers have been having trouble drawing in male consumers of all ages. As for boys, they're out playing sports or upstairs playing video games. And to drag them back to the TV, Disney will have to be less frilly and more edgy.
They're going to have to be careful. I mean, certainly as the boys get older, they are very sensitive to not wanting it to be too young or too girly.
We wanted to very much keep it real.
Richard Loomis is heading up Disney XD's branding and marketing. He says appearing authentic will be the key to appealing to boys.
Some of the typefaces might be a little grittier. There is a aggressive point of view in a very positive way that I think is will become very signature around Disney XD.
But authenticity runs deeper than keeping it real through font selection, warns Jane Buckingham.
A mistake would be for Disney to try and suddenly be, hey, we're the hippest, coolest, raciest site out there, when the kids would go, no, I'm sorry, you're Disney. Don't try to do that.
Disney Channel President Rich Ross says there's no danger of that. Disney XD will be decidedly Disney. Same storytelling, same family-friendly values, just a different look designed for a different audience who deserves better programming and who can buy lots and lots of Disney stuff. For NPR News, I'm Nate DeMeo.
From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Michelle Norris. At the Academy Awards on Sunday, the movie The Curious Case of Benjamin Button is up for 13 awards. They include nominations for actor Brad Pitt and for special effects. In the case of this movie, the two are not unrelated. In fact, in a third of the movie, it isn't Brad Pitt we see at all, but a computer-generated reproduction. That is NPR's Laura Seidel wondering how much longer it might be before directors and studios try making real-looking characters without real actors.
Benjamin Button is about a child born old who ages backwards.
It's not a well child, so gonna have to take good care of him.
I had 10 children. There's not a baby I can't care for. Let me see him. Oh, God in heaven. He looks just like my ex-husband.
Actually, he looks like an 80-year-old Brad Pitt whose head is on the body of an infant. Looks like, looks just like, but isn't.
Well, he's not Brad at all. He's not in any of the shots. There's 325 shots, 52 minutes of the film where there is no actual footage of Brad.
Steve Prieg is with the special effects studio Digital Domain. Essentially, they were able to make a computer-generated copy of Pitt's head and age it digitally. Then Pitt came in and they got the computer-generated head to imitate him. Take the scene where he gets up from a wheelchair in a church and walks.
How old are you?
7, but I look a lot older.
The head on this body is computer-generated, but it really is Pitt's performance, says Digital Domain's Ed Albrecht.
Brad decided to do something very different than we had thought he was going to do. He ends up getting this kind of crazy kind of Popeye look on his face, and he's just thrilled, and he's smiling, and he's going through all these emotions, and I don't think it's something that any of us would have thought of or had attempted had Brad not done that.
In the name of God's glory, rise up!
It actually wasn't Brad Pitt rising up, and that is what is so amazing about Benjamin Button. The studio accomplished something that had never been done before in animation. They made a computer-generated person look real. If they had failed, well, it would have been like zombies in The Night of the Living Dead. Zombies are so scary because they are so close to looking human, but they're just a little bit off. That's what computer-generated humans have looked like up till now. The space between zombies and the computer-generated Brad Pitt is something called the uncanny valley. What that means is that when a robot or computer-generated character gets really close to looking human, if it doesn't go all the way, It looks creepy. That's why zombies wig people out, says Digital Domain's Preek.
Even though they're a lot closer to humans than a primitive robot, people react better to the primitive robot and would rather have that around than a zombie in the house.
That's why it's been a lot easier for Pixar to make a robot named Wall-E cuddly than it was for Digital Domain to make a believably human reproduction of Brad Pitt. They knew they couldn't get anything wrong. Not a dimple, not a wry smile, not a crease in the forehead, or they were in zombie land.
In fact, we had a hard time hiring people for this show because everyone thought we were going to fail. No one wanted to be associated with a project where we made Brad Pitt look creepy and, you know, $150 million movie goes down the toilet because we made a zombie Brad.
But now that they've done it, gone to the other side of the uncanny valley, much more may be possible. There is no reason that they can't create a believable human character that isn't based on a movie star.
In terms of what we needed to figure out to be there, we are there right now.
Paul Debevic runs the USC Graphics Lab and worked on the Benjamin Button technology.
It's just a matter of a couple more film projects coming through that really refine the technologies, but the genie's out of the bottle.
But animators do need some sort of real human model, says animation supervisor Betsy Peterson.
Most of the animators have a mirror right by their monitor so that as they're working, they kind of make the faces and kind of try to figure out what is that essential thing that really gives you the feeling of the mood or attitude that you're trying to convey.
But it's a lot easier to deal with an animator than a famous movie star and a famous movie star's ego. In fact, they made a movie about this in 2002. It's called Simone. Al Pacino is the harried director Victor Taransky, demanding actress played by Winona Ryder.
It is not the size of the role, Victor. Am I or am I not entitled to the biggest trailer on the lot?
It's the biggest on Earth.
A mad scientist gives Taransky the computer technology to fashion a star out of his own imagination.
I have recreated the infinite nuances of a human being, a human soul.
Well, not so fast, Taransky. It may be harder than you think for a computer to recreate the sultry beauty of Greta Garbo, the brooding presence of a Marlon Brando, or even the winning smile of a Brad Pitt. UCLA acting professor Judith Moreland says when the real Brad Pitt finally showed up a third of the way through The Curious Case of Benjamin Button, she knew.
You could hear the whole audience in the movie theater kind of sigh, one, at just the beauty of Brad Pitt, and also the recognition of actually seeing an entire human being.
Moreland believes a real actor has an ineffable quality, and it isn't necessarily in the dialogue.
I'm always so interested in watching actors think.
Moreland points out George Clooney in Michael Clayton. At the very end of the film, after Clayton has seen his whole world fall apart.
And he gets into the cab, and it's actually happening while the credits are being rolled.
Just drive.
Clooney sits in the cab, his eyes darting over the scenes of New York passing by the windows. He draws in a few deep breaths.
We were enthralled by wondering, what is he thinking? Or I bet he's thinking about this, or look how he's sifting through all this information. I still think that there's something about actually looking at a human being and seeing something real, look back, real human. So it's about that human connection.
Moreland says real human beings have a light in their eyes that she can't imagine a computer could ever recreate. In fact, animators say it is the eyes that are their biggest challenge. Still, now that they've done what was once considered impossible, it's hard to believe they aren't going to try to breathe life into an entirely computer-generated person. Laura Seidel, NPR News.
You can watch a video showing how special effects experts created an aged Brad Pitt on our website. That's at npr.org. Our program is directed by Greg Dixon, edited by Franklin Cater, and produced by Neil Carruth. The technical director is Bill Deputy, assisted by Marty Curcius and Nathan Bark. National Desk staff includes Uri Berliner, Cindy Johnston, Denise Rios, Russell Lewis, Vicki Walton-James, Bruce Oster, Danielle Irby, Diana Douglas, and Katia Dunn. Our executive producer is Christopher Turpin. I'm Michelle Norris. You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News.